This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to Province Sports Radio. This is the big edition, Jonathan. It's a new little thing we're going to try here, see how it goes. We will do a rather lengthy podcast looking at the week ahead and some issues from the week past. Kind of a catch-all.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good idea. I mean, often Mondays, you and I spend a lot of time talking about the weekend, talking about the week ahead. And I think we've always thought that a smart way to go would be to share it with our Province Sports readers and listeners.
Yeah. So let's jump in. We are going to do this in three segments. First one, the first period, we will call it.
Nice.
Let's talk about the Vancouver Canucks a little bit. It's kind of frustrating this season for me. I know where fans are coming from. You always want to see your team do well. But some of the grumbling, typical grumbling that you see in here, I know you probably shouldn't base sports radio and or Twitter on really how people feel. But going into the season, people seem to be okay with the Canucks not competing for the Stanley Cup, but playing young players and really progressing for the future. So in 2 or 3 years, they could become real contenders. And that's kind of what management has done. They've given young players a chance. I think where we are now, we have a good grasp of, you know, who belongs and who doesn't. And I think Canuck fans should feel pretty good about where they are right now, but it still seems like people are dissatisfied.
Well, I mean, let's keep in mind that we've been spoiled here, haven't we, Paul? I mean, I realize there's been no Stanley Cup, but I was laughing about how next week, and I know this is something we'll talk about again, next week the West Coast Express is coming back to Rogers Arena. They're celebrating their successes of the past. You know, remember that when those...
Is Michael Dickerson going to be there?
I hope so.
Or Eric Mobley?
Yeah, I think they're done with honoring the Grizzlies. But
are you sure? Pete Chilcutt's slated to be here later in December.
No. He's way too busy on the speaker's circuit, right?
Okay.
But I think, honestly, you know, I look back to the West Coast Express, and the West Coast Express, Paul, followed years of mediocrity for the Canucks, you will recall. And what have we had in the last several years? Nothing but success. I
issue with that.
Hang on a second. I know there's been no Stanley Cup win, and there's been one Stanley Cup final, but regular season success,
which counts for
no. But hang on a second. You're a huge soccer fan, Paul, right?
Oh, don't give me this argument.
No, no. Give me what argument?
The league matters. It matters hugely in soccer. There's prestige about it. If you get a regular season win over Winnipeg, people aren't generally that happy.
Well, hang on a second. 2 years ago, they played really poorly under John Tortorella. Last year was a surprisingly delightful season if you're a Canucks fan.
And ended in crushing disappointment because you lost to a team most people think you should have beat.
Right.
The end result, I think, is what matters.
I realize that. Paul, hang on a second. It's an 82-game season. So what you're telling me is that the 82 games count for nothing. And that's what we've been taught by the NHL.
Right.
It means nothing to win the President's Trophy.
More fans than anything else. The amount the President's Trophy is mocked.
Yeah. So
this is what I'm saying. I agree with you. I think if the regular season could mean more, if people embraced it, awesome. But ultimately, the regular season are precursors to set yourself up for the playoffs. The reason you play well is to have home advantage, blah, blah, blah. The Canucks did that and lost. As they've lost their last three series that they have had home advantage in. Or actually, is it four going back to Boston?
Yeah.
So when you say we've been spoiled and had, you know, good teams here, I would counter that the lack of playoff success. If you get to the final and lose in seven games to Boston, as much as that still stings, if you get to the conference final, people will have, they will leave you winning a playoff series and they'll be happy. But the legacy of this team, that they've got to the conference final three times and made it to the final all three. They've never even lost in a conference final. I think to me, that's the mediocrity, the fact that they don't go on playoff runs. And that's what's frustrated people. So yes, under John Tortorella, they were a terrible team. And I think this is why people are so happy to have a rebuild. Typically, this team does not have even that mediocre playoff run. I mean, the amount of times they've even hit the second round is shocking. And I think that's what has frustrated people, to go to pay and shell out and deal with the mundane parts of the regular season and see no payoff in the spring. That's what really frustrates people.
But I would also say that this is a fan base that it isn't quite sure what it wants.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think, yes, we would like to have playoff success. Yes, there have been, ever since 2011, complete playoff failure. Like, pretty much the worst in the league for a team that's made the playoffs. The very bottom, right? So, but what is it people want? Like, are they happy finishing third from the bottom in the Western Conference, but having Hutton, McCann, Virtanen, Horvat all make strides? Or would people be more happy if they make those strides but scrape into the playoffs at the same time and lose four straight?
Well, I think people would be happy potentially with both. My guess is that they would be more happy with scenario A if it meant they got a higher draft pick that really matters. I think right now it's all about youth. But ultimately, people would like to see those players make stride and still have playoff success. But the issue for me is if you don't have a realistic shot at winning the cup, I think that's where fans, this fan base has matured, right? For honestly, through the 80s and 90s, you had 82, you had 94, but for a lot of that time, it was just get in the playoffs. Oh man, isn't it awesome to just be in the playoffs? The possibilities of just getting in there were a big deal. I think this fan base has matured. I think maybe it was spoiled by 2011 or spoiled by those teams. But people are ready now to look at this team and say, yeah, I want to see a core of 7, 8, 9 young players that can mature together and get in there. Now, you highlight some of these teams that are in that position, Colorado, Calgary, Edmonton, that have had a ton of young players of the same era that just can't put it together. Calgary is astonishing. It was last year a blip. Is this just part of the up and down nature of it's a tough year for young players and that next year you can expect them to grow from this? Or is it more like Edmonton that just keep adding young player after young player after young player with all this potential and it never pays off because you're not really building a team? I think it's a fascinating story for Canuck fans.
Yeah. And there's a lot that's fascinating to it, because while it's actually been really fun to watch these kids play, it was really great last week, wasn't it? To see, an apparent connection between Verbata and McCann, you know, McCann, who had scored 6 goals in a relatively short period of time, shows his playmaking skills, with the veteran. It's fascinating. It'll be interesting to see where they can go from here. Because they seem a little bit, do they seem a little bit hogtied again with some of their other veterans? And I don't think, you know, your problem is not the Sedins at this point or Yannick Hansen playing on the top line. Your problem is with some of those other guys, guys like Chris Higgins, guys like Alex Burrows, who are still, you know, they can kill penalties. They are good with puck possession, but ultimately,
apparently they can't kill penalties.
Right. But, you know, Chris Higgins, good with puck possession. We like to hear about he's good with puck possession. But last time I checked, ultimately the game is about scoring goals, beating the opponent. I don't know, like, how much does he contribute to that? Like, that may be some sort of conversation that should be had on a different plane, Vol. But it'll be interesting to see how Jim Benning can manage some of those guys who seem to be in a position where they can't really help the Canucks the way they maybe once could and can't seem to maybe be appealing to 29 other teams in the NHL to help them either.
Yeah, but this is where the skill of Jim Benning as a scout, this is why he was brought in. The issue is there's a hope that he can identify second, third, fourth round draft picks who will be guys that are regular contributors on an NHL roster, and you put that around the star power, some of these first round picks, and the team will mature. I certainly think they have the potential there. It's been an interesting season for the Canucks, though, Jonathan. Something we wrote about last week in the Morning Skate. There's an axiom in hockey now, and maybe it's just something that people parrot because they hear it, but at U.S. Thanksgiving, the standings are kind of, they are what they are, and that on average over, I think it's the last 10 years, there are only 3 spots which generally change from U.S. Thanksgiving to the end of the year in terms of who's in the playoffs and who's out. It puts this week in a very interesting lens for me because it's actually a huge week for the Canucks. They play Anaheim on Monday. You may be listening to this after that game. Anaheim picked to be a playoff contender or a Stanley Cup contender rather, out of the playoffs. Been playing better lately, but had really struggled at the start of the season, you know, flirting with that last playoff spot right now, moving up. But typically when U.S. Thanksgiving hit, they were out of the playoffs. Tomorrow, Tuesday, they play the LA Kings. Again, another team that's been very inconsistent, but, has a championship pedigree, and people are, last year, they're expecting the team to flick the switch. They didn't do it. This year, they have come on after a weak start. They've come on really well. Thursday, they return home and they have Dallas again, who they just played last week. Shock leaders in the West, at times over the last couple of weeks have had the best record in the NHL. People maybe not expecting Dallas to play or to stay where they are. And then Saturday, they have a game at home against the Bruins. Always exciting. Sting from 2011 is still there, even though a lot of the players in Boston have changed. That'll still be a hot atmosphere for the Canucks and a big test. So when I look at the Canucks this week, we can sit here and talk about whether the team surprises us, whether they've disappointed us, but I think we'll find out a lot more about the team this week.
Well, will we? You just said that things aren't going to change much after Thanksgiving.
So. I didn't say that. I say that's an axiom amongst other analysts. I buy into it.
And I'm curious about that, Paul, because, you know, Anaheim's only 4 points back of Vancouver. A bad week by Vancouver, and there's a pretty decent chance that, you know, Anaheim is now ahead of Vancouver.
That's if you subscribe to the theory that Anaheim is an elite team. There's a lot of people who are saying, we've been waiting for a month for this to happen, for Anaheim to wake up, and they still look disastrous. Had a lead on Chicago on Friday and just played horribly, ended up losing in overtime. They got 1 point. But that, yeah, a bad week, Vancouver and Anaheim could pass them, assuming Anaheim actually starts playing like Anaheim.
Well, and there's some suggestion that there are problems in Anaheim with coach Bruce Boudreau, a guy who's had, again, significant success, you would think, with Anaheim. Although, as we talk about the Canucks in 2011 and what else they've done in the regular season, you could argue that Anaheim's had no success ultimately, right? So, although.
Well, except for the one cup they've won.
Not under Bruce Boudreau.
No, not under right? Bruce Boudreau, but they do have a cup.
Yeah.
Which is the answer, as you know, as an Edmonton Oilers fan, Oilers fans will still even say to the Canucks, win a cup.
Yeah. I mean, and as for this week for the Canucks, this is a tough one, man. This one jumps out, and it especially jumps out because tonight and tomorrow, Monday and Tuesday, are back to backs. And then it's every two nights for a week, right?
Yeah.
It's four home games, right? Following coming home from Los Angeles. And, I mean, you and I both know, the Canucks win the games. They seem to win the games they're not supposed to win.
And they seem to.
Exactly. So next Monday night when they host Buffalo, which would seem to be the easiest game in the next week, you know they're going to lose that.
Yeah, it's been that kind of year for the Canucks, and I think that's why it's been interesting. You know, whether people are happy or not, interesting is the best way to describe it because there's so many storylines here. But ultimately, I think there's a lot of fans out there who say they'd be happy with the team being in the bottom five and having a good shot at a top draft pick. I don't know enough about the upcoming draft to suggest whether it's a deep draft or not. I just know that guys that they've been drafting in that sort of teen to 20s that are now coming about, you know, getting the two picks, you know, Horvat, Shinkarak, you know, McCann, Vertanen, these are good. When you've had like back-to-back drafts where you've had a couple of picks, those guys all seem to be, yeah, we can count on them being contributors over the next 5 to 10 years. And I think that's what the Canucks are looking for. The issue now, as we get closer to the trade deadline and where this team is what does ownership want? You know, do they want the chance to sneak into the playoffs and get some playoff revenue? Or is it a case where the Canucks could actually sell some veterans? Who knows? There might be a market for Alex Burrows or Chris Higgins. I doubt it, at the trade deadline where you could add some more pieces, some more second. I mean, for God's sake, you got a second round pick for Tortorella. How the hell did that happen? But these are the kind of chips that Jim Benning appears to want because the drafting and the scouting are what this team is going to be built on if it's going to win a championship. So I just find the storylines out of this team fascinating going forward.
And then they are fascinating. When you talk about the trade deadline, and I wonder if, you know, is there really a team out there that's on the bubble that's going to say, geez, Chris Higgins could really help us. And I just feel like, you know, significant doubt on that level. Alex Burrows, a guy who's been to a Stanley Cup final, is feisty. But does he help the way he once helped?
And will he be willing to go?
Would he be willing to go? So, you know what's, when you talk about the storylines that are fascinating and you talk about the trade deadline and you talk about Jim Benning being bold, is Jim Benning going to be bold at the trade deadline and trade one of these young guys that we're so excited to see because a Jared McCann could bring something. Like, that's going to be interesting.
I mean, and that won't upset the fan base.
That won't necessarily go over well.
No. But it's going to be fun, especially in this next week, because we said a lot of stuff going on here. But, you know, it is time to start to pay attention to teams like Anaheim and say, well, are they going to turn it on, or are they going to be like the LA Kings last year, just never put it together? That is the end of the first period, as we call it.
Sorry. Is that a terrible end of the first period buzzer?
That was really awful.
Can you give me one? Give me one.
No, I'm not going to give
you. You got to signify the end of the first.
No. Silence? I need sound effects. Yeah, it'll be like Rogers Arena. If we could add
a minute to go in the third.
If we could add crickets chirping, we would. I'd reference the clapper, but you gave me hell for doing that before because the clapper apparently is dead.
Yeah, and I don't know that for sure, but yeah. I'm pretty sure I saw that. Okay,
well, if he's not, he's We're listening. Yeah. There we go. Okay, the end of the first period, and we will be back in a second with the second period. Okay, Jonathan, here we are, our second segment.
That was good. That was a great break.
Second segment. So we are going to talk some football here. Again, football of all sorts, a pigskin potpourri.
Ooh, nice.
We have the UBC Thunderbirds winning the Vanier Cup on Saturday. We have the Edmonton Eskimos winning the Grey Cup on Sunday. We have...
You mean the Edmonton football team?
Yeah. The NFL situation over the Thanksgiving weekend, some spectacular games, including the Patriots losing their first game, and a snow Sunday nighter up against the Grey Cup. Also locally, the Seahawks having just an absolutely spectacular game themselves down at CenturyLink Field, beating the Steelers.
All right, where do you want to start?
Where do you want to start?
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we start? Let's start with the Seahawks then. How does that sound?
Yeah.
Funny how that was not an easy win, obviously, over Pittsburgh, right? I don't know. It seemed like one of those games, Paul, where if Ben Roethlisberger hadn't been removed from the game going into Pittsburgh's last drive, was it one of those games where Roethlisberger may well have just marched down the field against a traditionally strong Seahawks pass defense that was not very good yesterday, right? Giving up 450 yards. I just wonder, how close did the Seahawks come to losing that game? But the flip side is there were a lot of people counting out the Seahawks.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like it's going to be easy for them. They seem to be making every game tough on themselves.
Yeah.
But don't you think they're going to be in it till the end?
Well, they're now in a playoff spot. They do have some tough games left, including going into Minnesota this weekend. You know, they're going to be battling Atlanta, who are dropping like a stone for that wild card spot. And I think the big question for Seahawks fans is, without home advantage, which they've had the last two seasons, is that going to get them into the Super Bowl? Because they've needed that home advantage to get there. It was a really funny game, Jonathan, because yes, they gave up a team record 456 yards passing, but they also had some huge sacks of Roethlisberger, and they had three interceptions. If Roethlisberger hadn't gone out, I still think they win because they had a 9-point lead.
That's true.
And you know, what won them the game was Pittsburgh was marching for a go-ahead touchdown, and at 4th and 2 inside the 10, decided to kick the field goal and try and stop him and get the ball back rather than going for the touchdown.
Right.
When the team had given up all, you know, again, insane amounts of passing yards. You've racked up at that point about 450 yards on the Seahawks defense. It's 4th and 2. Like, go for it, because you would have taken the lead at that point, and then you put it in the hands of your defense. They kick the field goal, and then on 3rd down, they give up an 80-yard touchdown to Doug Baldwin. Now, all of a sudden, it looks like a blowout, and Roethlisberger had the concussion issue. But it was a character win for the Seahawks. And look, the Seahawks are struggling this year for me because they gave up guys like Max Unger to get Jimmy Graham. They gave up defensive linemen who they couldn't fit under the salary cap because they had to pay Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner. You know, Cam Chancellor sat out, but they, you know, and didn't get any more money apparently, but that promise is coming down the road for him. It just shows in the NFL, you have success, your stars want money, you have to manage the cap. They've stripped out the depth from their team, and I think that's why they're struggling, but they're still a really dangerous team. They lost at home to Carolina. But I think Seattle going into Carolina in the playoffs would still terrify the Panthers. They're a team with a Super Bowl pedigree. They've been in there in their playoffs before. And again, like yesterday, they can give up 450 yards. And that Steelers team is loaded with weapons. You know, Roethlisberger throwing to, you know, they had a guy who was like fourth on the depth chart, Wheaton, you know, come up with over 200 yards yesterday. They got Martavius Bryant, Antonio Brown, two of the fastest receivers in the NFL. But they come up with the three interceptions that make the difference in the game in the end of the day. So I think that's when you're in a one-off and they have that experience and they still have that pride. You know, I hear people saying the Legion of Boom aren't what they are used to be. Well, they aren't, but they're still capable of stepping up at the big moment and winning a game for you. And I think that's what they did yesterday.
So how do you like, so this, they're not going to win the NFC West, right? Arizona's going to win the NFC West.
Yeah. Even if they were to beat Arizona in Arizona.
That's right. So this is going to be a weekly fight for them right till the end, right? Right through the end of December. Yep. Most immediately, they've just had three home games in a row. Now they go on the road. Second of those two games is in Baltimore against the Ravens, against a team that has nothing to prove and may well throw in the
starting
towel.
Quarterbacks out, yeah.
Right. What do you think about this coming week, though, when they're in Minnesota to play the Vikings?
Well, it's huge because, you know, the Vikings shocked a lot of the NFL. You know, Green Bay was one of that sort of cadre of undefeated teams going back about 5 weeks. We'd never seen that many undefeated teams that I think it was 6 or 7-0. And then they lose a couple and the Vikings were on their tail. And then Minnesota loses at home to Green Bay. And it's like, oh, okay, things are back to where they should be. But then Green Bay loses at home to both Detroit and Chicago. Like, are you kidding me? And Minnesota now look like a you know, that they're for real again. And it's a huge test for the Seahawks because, number one, they need the win to get in the playoffs. Number two, it's a team they'll likely have to go through in the playoffs in Minnesota. So in a way, it's an audition for them. But this is the Seahawks. We talk about the Canucks. Look, the Seahawks actually won a championship. But the issues around this team are all over the place. The storylines for the Seahawks team this year is very similar to the Canucks. Is what's going on? Russell Wilson threw for 5 touchdown passes yesterday. He's never done that before. You know, they still have playmakers who can win games for you. The storylines out of the Seahawks team are fantastic this year. And I think you say, you know, Minnesota this week, it is a fantastic test against a team that has an elite running back, a young quarterback who's doing exceptionally well, and a great defense with a defensive-minded coach.
Well, when you talk about them having to go through Minnesota in the playoffs, not necessarily, but this is a huge one because in the NFC North, as you say, Minnesota's now leapfrog Green Bay because of Green Bay's two surprising losses. So in fact, you have what makes this game particularly important is that one of those two teams in the NFC North has the wild card spot ahead of Seattle.
Yeah.
No matter what happens this coming weekend, right? And so I just find that super interesting because after this, there isn't a tough test for the Seahawks until the season finale in Phoenix.
Well, here's where it all plays out, though, Jonathan. If you look at the NFC East, that is so weak. If the Seahawks end up as the better wild card, they could end up playing the Washington Redskins in Washington, or the New York Giants if it ends up being the Giants. Basically, a horrible team who could be sub 500 as a division leader, but would have the home game. And I would still favor the Seahawks if they make it in at that point. And then you're looking at going to either a Carolina or a Minnesota if they're the two teams that get the bye. Or sorry, Arizona would probably be at that point, either Arizona or Carolina for the right to go to the NFC Championship. I think the Seattle team, I do think they're well positioned. I think they'll get the wild card. I saw a bunch of time and Pittsburgh is a very tough team. So I think they showed their mettle yesterday.
By the way, you know, you talk about the NFC East and they've not been a good division for a few years now, right? It is funny to see the Giants and Washington tied atop the division at 5-6. And doesn't it remind you of the old NFC West, right? It
wasn't that. Seahawks won the division at 7-9, but I believe that
was CFL like 7-9.
Yeah. So, but it can turn around your fortunes. You win a division like that and get some momentum and, you know, some of your young players, you know, come up. But the NFL is fascinating this year. I know, if you look at New England who won yesterday, part of the thing that we're going to talk about is the NFL versus CFL question. And look, I'm a big NFL fan. I used to cover the CFL. I do have a soft spot in my heart for the CFL. That may be fading.
It's fading.
It's and I talk about it all the time. The lack of star power in the CFL. you know, I can't think of a player in the league that compels me to go and buy a ticket. And yesterday I'm looking at the decision to watch the CFL and the Grey Cup between Edmonton and Ottawa that I just didn't really care about. You know, Henry Burst was a great story at 40, still playing, but it didn't compel me to watch the game. And it was up against the spectacular Seattle Pittsburgh game. And then you had this, you know, New England, Denver game in the snow, which always looks fantastic. I don't want to pick on the CFL, I'm not suggesting they schedule it at another time or any of those things, but
which is what you usually suggest.
And we can get into that in another week. When we talk about,
they should have started at Sunday at midnight after the NFL Sunday night game.
Exactly. In your case, don't put it up against The Walking Dead. If you want, you chose to watch The Walking Dead over the Grey Cup. At least I chose another live sporting event. Anyhow, before we get off track, the issue around the CFL isn't when they schedule a game. The issue is around star power.
Yeah,
and sure. You know, I've made this point before that the NFL could sell a Super Bowl to you between two of its smaller markets, Indianapolis and New Orleans, because they had Peyton Manning versus Drew Brees. That was the storyline. And in other sports, we seem, oh, it's New York against Chicago. It's going to be a big Stanley Cup. It's not about where it is. I mean, yes, you'll get domestic numbers in that market where they'll be more enraptured. But why would I care about Edmonton and Ottawa yesterday? The CFL does not do a good job of promoting, pushing, marketing their stars. And yeah. Who is the biggest star in the CFL this year? Henry Burris won Most Outstanding Player, 40-year-old quarterback.
Okay, so you know I have season tickets for the Lions. Big shocker, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many times did you go?
I went to 4 games this year. That's almost half the season.
More than last year.
Yep. It was more than last year. So here's the thing. I would say that your average CFL fan knows a lot about the home team. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I know I'm a little different since I'm the sports editor, but I know there are a lot of people like me who are Lions fans. Go to Lions games and understand some of the key issues around the Lions. They know who Jonathan Jennings is. They're familiar with the Travis Lule story. They know about Andrew Harris and the new head coach and Wally Buono. And, you know, like they know those things. But do they know 5 key storylines for the Saskatchewan Roughriders? No, they just don't. They don't. And I do agree with you that a lot of this is about star power. I don't know a ton about the NFL, but I could give you the broad strokes on most of the NFL teams. Some of it is marketing. Some of it is the fact that it's the best, Paul. It's the best league. Like, and there's no shame in the CFL being the second best professional football league in North America. Like, there's no shame in it, right? It's unique in its own way. The athletes are very good. Are they not? You covered the sport. Right? The athletes are excellent. Would 100% of them rather play in the NFL and succeed in the NFL? Probably.
Yeah, they would.
Right? But it's very good football. There's nothing wrong with the quality of the football. And there are a lot of great competitive games that go down to the wire. And there are a lot of blowouts. But the problem is, because it's second best, I think that really hurts on the personality front.
No,
it really does.
No, it does, but... You know, if we go to, if we go back to the Lions' last Grey Cup, like even as not a huge fan, there were a ton of marketable names there: Brent Johnson, Dante Marsh, Ryan Phillips, Corey Banks, Andrew Harris was on that team, G. Roy Simon, Travis Lule was the best quarterback in the CFL at that point. You run through that whole era, and I know part of it is, you know, in order to have star players, you have to win. But these days, it doesn't seem like Adam Big Hill, who was on that team, Solomon Aluminium, they're big names, but, you know, the line, and I know Jonathan Jennings offers hope for that, but, you know, when your best two players are defensive, I don't know. I think it's tough. I look back at that last Lions team that won, and they had people that you wanted to cheer for. And I think this team desperately lacks that. But beyond that, Jonathan, is exactly what you talked about. The whole league lacks it. Like, since Anthony Calvillo left Montreal, who was left? We joked about how long Anthony Calvillo played and how they needed to move on from Anthony Calvillo. But Calvillo's gone, and they haven't moved on from him. The lack of star power in this league now is stunning to me. And Zach Collaros, fairly... fairly highly appreciated quarterback at a lower level university in Cincinnati when he was there. Didn't get an NFL shot, really. Came to the CFL and looked like, and he got injured this year. But they need four Zach Collaroses, and John, maybe Jonathan Jennings is one of those. That's what I look at. Is I can prefer the NFL all I want. It's, you're absolutely right. There's a huge difference in perception versus the difference in ability. The best players in the CFL are a wrinkle away, or a coach's preference away from playing in the NFL. Cam Wake, I know he's kind of one of a kind, but he shows us that. The athletic ability in that line is very small, but the perception is monstrous. And that bleeds into a college situation that I want to talk about as well.
Well, we're not done with this subject, though.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead. So 19%, that's the apparent drop in TV viewership this year, right?
Yeah.
For the CFL. That is significant. Right?
Huge.
One in five people this year
Yeah.
who were watching the CFL a year ago are
not
now.
To, yeah.
Right? So why is that? There are various reasons. The NFL is a reason. The conflict with the NFL, right? Particularly on Sundays, right? As you said yesterday, would you rather be watching an excellent, you know, Seattle game in the afternoon followed by the Denver-New England game? But guess what? Both those games conflicting with the Grey Cup.
Yeah.
No fault of the Grey Cups. Right. But holy mackerel, like, it's not like it was a lousy lineup for the NFL. So I think, you know, I'd be interested to know, right, those people who are not watching the CFL in the past year, why is it? And I know it's, some of it's the NFL, and some of it is that the world is just getting more and more complex. It's more and more complex for the province, right? Like, people don't read newspapers the way they once did. They don't go to football games the way they once did, or to movies, or watch TV.
Well, it doesn't help when you're a hoarder of your TV contract. I mean, there's a guy in our office, news editor here, who's been a Lions season ticket holder going back to the 50s, I believe his family had tickets. He went to two games this year because the fans had universally said Sundays was their preferred day for games. Fridays and Saturdays were their preferred day for games because of the TV contract. And when TSN wanted the games, they did not have home games. I remember it was early September? I think it was early September. Beautiful Saturday night. BC Place sat empty. No Whitecaps, no Lions. The Lions played the following day again. Oh, that's right. It was up against the Seahawks home opener or the Seahawks. No, Seahawks on the road to open the season. So this NFL starts. There's a 2 o'clock game at home for the BC Lions when Saturday night BC Place sat empty. And why? Because that's when TSN wanted to broadcast the games. And I know you pay that money for you're a slave to that, but it's wrong. If your fans don't go to the games, if they don't buy tickets, if it doesn't work for them, it diminishes the excitement. And again, it's the star power. And I just think I'm sitting there, and the reason we were having dinner that night, in the Olympic Village, overlooking False Creek, and there the stadium sat empty. And the next day, when everyone was excited about the start of the NFL, boom, the Lions are playing at home at 2 o'clock on a Saturday or on a Sunday afternoon. It just doesn't make sense.
But you know what? You laugh about my conflict with The Walking Dead yesterday. It was the mid-season finale for The Walking Dead, and it was on between 6 and 7, which was essentially the late third quarter till the end of the fourth quarter of the Grey Cup. So I had watched a fair chunk of the Grey Cup up until that point. And then I started watching The Walking Dead. And during Walking Dead commercials, I would flip back to the Grey Cup. And then I forgot.
Yeah.
Like, I was so compelled by The Walking Dead that I forgot to flip back. And this is, I have to tell you, this is how it is.
Yeah, but the funny thing is that you are from Edmonton.
Yes.
But you don't, like, you have an Edmonton Eskimos 1948 Melton wool jacket. It's or
very
something.
Nice. Yes.
So you even had a reason and eschewed it. I can't imagine for the average fan here what would compel them to watch Edmonton, Ottawa. And look, my parents used to have Grey Cup parties all the time. I said to my wife, do you know anyone who's having a Grey Cup party? And she said, no.
Yeah.
And we're not exactly youngsters. I mean, I'm 50 next year. So, you know, I can't imagine any 20 or 30 year olds that are going to Grey Cup parties.
Yeah. I can tell you though that, when I was a kid and my parents were our age now, Paul, we went to Grey Cup parties every year. Here's the other thing. I had been to exactly one NFL game before I moved to Vancouver. Then I saw the Seahawks playing the Kingdome, which was not a particularly interesting experience for me, I recall. But when they moved to CenturyLink Field and I started to go to Seahawks games, I'll never forget the first time I went to a Seahawks game at CenturyLink Field. I actually felt like I was at a Super Bowl. It was such a big event and they only have 8 of them, right? A year. It is such a big deal when you go to Seattle or when you go to an NFL game in many other American cities. Game day is a huge thing, whether it's the tailgating, the prep, just arriving at the stadium. The atmosphere there is so exciting. You know, I'm an emotional guy. It is hard not to get pumped up and caught up in the moment. That does not happen even remotely same way when I go to BC Place.
Yes, so there's big events. There's this, and I'll tell you why, and I don't think enough people talk about this. When you have 8 or 9 teams, depending on who's folded and who's reborn, and you play 18 regular season games, and you eliminate 3 teams from the playoffs, those games don't mean anything. So, like right now, you mentioned the Seahawks earlier. Well, we both did. Seattle is fighting for their playoff lives every single week because they got off to a bad start. So every game is huge. The fans knew yesterday if they lost to Pittsburgh that their playoff hopes were pretty much done. Well, not pretty much done, but took a huge dent with 5 weeks to go. So every game has this urgency. Last time the Lions won the Grey Cup, they were 1-7 and ended up flipping the switch, got some guys back healthy, brought some guys in from NFL cuts, caught lightning in a bottle, and bang, off they went. And I think that that's the problem with the CFL is that they just play too many games that don't mean anything. Oh, we're playing Saskatchewan again? Oh, Saskatchewan's 0-9. The urgency isn't there. You lose the game in the middle of this. Like when you have the schedule to yourself in July, August, before all these other things have happened and you maybe want to, it's the argument against baseball as well. If the Cleveland Indians are 17 games out in August, you know, it's just kind of the games don't mean anything. And I think that's the big difference between when you go to an NFL game, every win and loss means so much versus the CFL where you kind of yawn your way through it. And I don't know how they overcome that other than you need to give me players that I want to go see play.
Here's my last word on the Grey Cup. The guy who sang the national anthem, horribly out of tune, Paul.
It was more out of tune than Fall Out Boy.
Yeah. I mean, my 9-year-old watched the anthem with me and he was laughing his head off because the guy was literally just constantly changing pitch. It was really, really weird. Like he didn't do it once, which I thought might happen. He kept going all over the place. And I don't know, maybe it's hard singing a national anthem in a stadium.
Thanks, Simon.
You're welcome.
You mean he didn't make it his own?
Please let that be the end of the second period.
That is the end of the second period. Okay, at the start of the third period here, this is kind of going to be a kind of a catch-all, but I did want to
feel well rested.
Yeah, I did want to bleed over with football a little bit. UBC wins the Vanier Cup on the weekend on Saturday. It was a very entertaining game. They have this great story. Michael O'Connor, quarterback, freshman, came from Penn State like a kid. So you look at the pedigree, right? Like we finally have a great Canadian quarterback. It was a very compelling game. I think the UBC Thunderbirds are a great story. They did have some decent crowds this year, but by decent crowds, that's like 9,000. This has turned into, Jonathan, a spectacular U.S. college football weekend. The rivalry games on Thanksgiving, they've spread them out more. We had the Apple Cup, Washington against Washington State. You have the Iron Bowl, Auburn against Alabama, Florida State, Florida, Michigan, Ohio State. So there's a historical significance to this weekend, but the games themselves were magnificent. You had, you know, USC, UCLA. There's all sorts of reasons to watch U.S. college football, and you've got up to 100,000 people, 90,000 people in the stands of these games. Why do people care so much about college sports in the U.S. and not in Canada?
Okay. Well, I've spent lots of time in the States. I lived in the States for a few years, and I would say here's a big difference, Paul. When you meet somebody, when you're a Canadian, as you and I are, and we meet other Canadians, we can go a long time after having met these people without any idea of where they went to university. This does not happen south of the border. When you are at a house party down in Washington, and you meet somebody, the second or third question out of the mouth of the stranger you've just met is, so where'd you go to school? Right? And it doesn't happen here. It happens there. It's for numerous reasons, I'm sure, that people ask you. It's a perfectly fine icebreaker. I also think it's a bit of a socioeconomic thing, because somebody goes to Washington State and somebody else goes to Harvard, and they're on different levels, right?
So you really?
Yeah, exactly.
They don't have the genealogy of a potato study at Harvard?
No, exactly. So I think, so part of it for me, Paul, is that just on that base social level, there's such fascination with where you went to school that doesn't happen in Canada. We don't care where people went to school.
You know that. You live that. But that, it's overall, it's in the culture of the pride of the community. And that's one of the things that drives me crazy about UBC. I didn't go to UBC. I went to University of Western Ontario, where football was a big deal and it's a small town. But there were almost 60,000 people registered in some form or other at UBC, a campus of that size. There have to be over 100,000 alum of UBC in this city. I have no idea what the number is, but I would guess if you've got 60,000 people in there, you know, every year, over a 4-year span, grad school, et cetera, you've got to have like tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of alum, you know, and you can only get 9,000 people on your best day for a football game where I'm out at UBC 3 times a week for soccer. It's a beautiful campus. It's a great place to be. I know it may be a bit hard to get to from people who aren't actually in Vancouver proper, but man, I just culturally, I don't understand how even a bad Huskies team can put 45 to 50,000 people in the stands with Mariners and Sounders and Seahawks, as competition. Yet up here, it's just like people don't care. And now I went on a putridly cold night to the CIS, National Soccer Championships, and it was actually fun. And there were about 1500 people there. But again, it was like you have a campus with that many people. I just don't know why people aren't engaged. And yeah, part of it may be socioeconomic, et cetera. I get that. But UBC is a very good school. They do great things in education. If you come out of UBC with a degree, it's generally something to be proud of and something that will get you further in life. Yet that pride doesn't extend to all things T-Bird.
Well, first of all, we've just talked about this. We've just talked about CFL versus NFL. So part of the issue, I'm sure, would be you could call it CIS versus NCAA. So you look at the Washington Huskies and you say a bad Washington Huskies team in a one-off game against the UBC Thunderbirds, how are they going to do?
Yeah.
Right?
No, obviously it's.
So again, is this CFL versus NFL? Is CIS second tier? When you watch it, when you watched a bit of the Vanier Cup on the weekend, did you see any like noticeable difference? Did it look like a lesser quality of football? I think it probably
it did, but it was no less exciting. I mean, we had over, I think both quarterbacks had over 300 yards passing. You know, it was a fantastic game that was decided on a kick, lots of turnovers, last minute of the game. But you're right. There were like maybe 8,000 people there and there was no atmosphere.
Okay. So you also mentioned another problem, accessibility.
Yeah.
Look where UBC is located. Look at the map of Vancouver. It sits out there on that point overlooking the strait.
But they've got a $60,000 or 60,000 number.
Yep.
Of any given day. How many of those 60,000 are out there?
How many of those 60,000 people do you think are there in the evening?
Well,
I would say that the place empties out by five o'clock.
There's a ton of people in the area. Like the residences, they've turned UBC into its own little city out there. Look, I still think
there are tons of commuters among 60,000.
I just think it's just culturally, I don't understand why we just don't adapt it. And I'm using UBC as the example because they won the Vanier Cup. But the same thing exists for UBC hockey, which apparently we all love hockey here. Same thing exists in Calgary, in Regina, where they do care about football. You know, we're not talking about crowds to rival the Rough Riders when University of Regina play. It's just something where I scratch my head and I think of how much they adopt it. And I think of people here who say things like, I'm a huge Tar Heels fan. Oh, did you go there? No. Why do you like the Tar Heels so much? Well, Michael Jordan was my favorite player. Okay, so you won't go to UBC to support local sports, even though you went to UBC, but you're a huge Tar Heels fan and you'll watch their games. I think that's the disconnect. We inherently put a label on something that's Canadian and consider it to be inferior.
Well, I also think this, just in general, whether it's high school or university, we're there for school, right? Doesn't mean we don't play sports, but by and large, we're just not really that aware of it. It's probably not marketed very well to students, right? And you go and sometimes you discover that it's fun. Like, I'll bet you if you ask people who go to UBC basketball games in the middle of the winter, they'll tell you that that's a lot of fun.
Well, right? But this is why one of my points is I'm not an alum of UBC. I don't necessarily have a cheering stake in UBC. But on a sunny October or September day out at Thunderbird, that would be a fantastic way to spend a day.
Yeah, of course. No, of course it would be fun. But I just don't think we just don't have it in us. It wasn't brought up in us. We weren't our little girls when they're 5 years old are not told when you're 12, you're going to be a cheerleader in middle school, right? This is what happens south of the border.
Yeah.
Little girls are told if you're not going to be an athlete, you're going to be a cheerleader. And in some places, being a cheerleader or being in the marching band is as important as being on the team.
But there's another thing. I would love to see UBC have a marching band. Why not? It would make it a lot more fun to go to those games. Yeah. But anyhow, I just think it's an interesting topic. And as we
could spend hours talking about this.
We could. And you're right. All those things, accessibility, marketability, but I think culturally is the big thing. And it would be... famously, there was once a UBC sports information director who published my name, phone number, and email on the tickets to lobby for more coverage. And
whatever happened to that guy?
He's now our soccer beat writer. Shockingly, jerk. But yeah, what a jerk! And he wears wrinkled shirts all the time too. But I had one from that putting my name on tickets, saying complain about the lack of coverage. I had one email, and it was from someone who said, hey, I don't really care, but just so you know, this is on the UBC tickets. I thought you should know. Anyhow, that's...
You know what? Sorry, one last thing, which is funny when you talk about one person complaining. What's funny is Howard Samura writes about high school and university sports.
And we do have the Subway Bowl this weekend, right?
And the Subway Bowl is this weekend. Howard's numbers in terms of social media, when his stories get posted, Facebook in particular, enormous number of Facebook shares.
Yeah.
Right? So we talk about how people don't care, and yet there's at least a small subculture that cares about every story he writes, whether it's about a specific high school in Surrey or it's about SFU.
Yeah.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is interesting. All right, we have to wrap it up there. We did have a few other things we wanted to talk about, but we'll save them for next week, seeing as this is our first edition. So we hope you enjoyed listening. We have various other multimedia things coming all week at theprovince.com. Jonathan, any closing words?
Thank you, Paul.
All right. Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you next week.